Welcome to the podcast, a podcast about podcasting.
From True Story FM, I'm Pete Wright.
I'm Andy Nelson. Hello, everybody.
Hi, we're here to talk about podcasting in the year of our Lord, 2024.
It was a, a podcasting week. The Hot Pod Summit took place this week, Pete.
It was very exciting. Hot podding I didn't go. I say that as if I was there, but it was a big deal. Because, you know, podcast luminary, podcast true, podcast impresario, Ira Glass was there.
Yeah.
Ira Glass. Hot Pod, let me just say, the Hot Pod Summit was presented by AdsWiz and Simplecast, now part of the SiriusXM Media conglomerate. And it was in Brooklyn, and it was a great day discussing all kinds of really interesting things about podcasting right now. Ira Glass's perspective on This American Life. This American Life is a funny entity as a podcast. And I wonder how it is perceived. Like, when you think of This American Life, do you think of it as an NPR distributed show or do you think of it as a podcast?
I think of it as an NPR distributed show.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if a lot of people see it as that still, but it is substantially a podcast. It is distributed under PRX. It is a show that the show or the property, the company, This American Life, was originally a co-owned entity by Ira Glass and WBEZ, the private radio station, for 20 years.
Right, yeah, long time.
Long time, and then he took it private again. So it is now just a private company with him at the charge of it, I guess, distributed by PRX and him, and that's how it ends up on lots of different local stations around the country and podcasts around the world. He talked about the downturn in podcast downloads after the iOS 17 crash of late 2023. And I thought that was really interesting. It, for This American Life, which is a significant show, it dropped 20%. And he said, in talking about that experience, he said, look, these numbers are emotional. And for me to be able to talk to a sponsor, an advertising sponsor, and what I used to say was, we've got 4.5 million people who listen to the show each week. And now I have to say 3.5 million people listen to the show every week because of that choice that Apple made. It was hard. Hard to make that switch. I think, you know, in looking at the interviews, it's hard not to see anybody suggest that we're worse off knowing the truth about our listeners, right?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Everybody seems to be on board with the idea, like, having more accurate numbers is better. But my goodness, the transition's hard for a lot of big shows.
Well, and small shows, too. Like, anyone who saw that huge drop in listenership, I mean, it does make your heart sink a little bit when you think that your show is this popular and then you're finding out, oh, well, not really. Those numbers really didn't accurately reflect it. And, you know, he's right to a certain sense. Like, it's nice to know what the actual numbers are. It's still impossible to kind of know what the actual numbers are. But but if these are a more accurate representation, it's good to have, but it makes this transition very difficult. And for smaller shows where it could be a huge drop in numbers, I mean, it could potentially kill a show. Like, if the advertisers are suddenly like, oh, well, it's actually only that. Well, we don't want to advertise with you anymore. Like, it could potentially be a big shift. And so that's, I think, the element of this transition that, you know, it does make me wish that there was a different way Apple could have gone about coming to that without just kind of like the drastic immediate shift.
Yeah, right. So hard to make that shift, particularly for shows that were on the bubble and now they're not inside of the bubble anymore. And that gets to, you know, Kelly Hurley was there, and Kelly is the global head of revenue and partnerships for SiriusXM, and along with Thomas Rodriguez, who is the senior director of audio partnerships at the Trade Desk. And they were talking about, you know, the status of, you know, advertising, programmatic or dynamically inserted ads versus CPM, cost per thousand ads, which is really hard because, you know, for the longest time in my kind of podcast journey, I was working off of data that was like, you know, if you want a brand deal for a podcast, early on it was like, if you can get 10,000 downloads, 5,000, 10,000 downloads, great. Then for a lot of years, it was 20,000 downloads per episode on a 7-day rolling basis. It's great. That's really great. Now that number is 100,000. Kelly says, I'd say we'd like to see 100,000 downloads at minimum per episode. That's ideal for a larger brand advertising deal. So that's like the Squarespaces or the Casper mattresses for those groups.
And is she saying that per in a 7-day window? Did she say what the window
not say what the window is, but okay. I guarantee you it's not 6 months, right? You know, it might be 7 days, it might be 30 days, but it's like that they want those ads, or they want those kinds of numbers. And it's because of the inflation of really big properties that have turned to podcasting and seen those kinds of numbers, which if you step back and think about it for a minute, is awesome for podcasting, right? It's demonstrating that, my goodness, there are shows that command those sorts of broad audiences, and it's great. Yeah. Where it's hard is for startup podcasts, mid-tier podcasts that are in that sub 5,000 downloads per episode rolling, because it's going to take you that much longer to see return. And so, you know, that's when we start talking about what are you doing? How are you selling your audience, right? Your diverse niche audience for what you do. I think that ends up influencing the kind of podcast you do, right? You have an opportunity. All you're looking to do is build value that comes in the way of, look at who I am talking to, right? I'm talking to a niche audience that celebrates incredibly diverse ideals and might not be huge, but they are valuable for XYZ reasons. That's what she's talking about here, Kelly Hurley. She's like, look, if you don't have a broad 100,000 download to start audience, that's okay, because you might have a really incredible niche audience that is of great value too. It just means, as a podcaster, you have to really figure out who that audience is and what kind of content are you using to appeal to them and build value.
Yeah. I do also like when, I think it was Rodriguez who was talking about the CPM ads and how, I mean, we've had experience with CPM ads. Sometimes they're frustrating because, and this is often one of the big complaints, is like they feel tone deaf to the subject sometimes, where it doesn't necessarily feel like they're matched to the content in the podcast when they're added into them. But one of the benefits, and I think this is a valuable thing, when podcast advertisers don't have the money to throw into those big shows that have the 100,000 downloads per episode, the CPM ads, that's a place where they can get these smaller advertisers trying it out and putting their, you know, their brand out there just to see, is this a space where we can actually use advertising and actually get a return on our investment? And I think there is a value to that element of those CPM ads.
Well, and just to make sure we're clear, what we're talking about is DAI, right? You're really talking about programmatic ads. Yeah. The cost per million or cost per meal that you're charging through programmatic is lower, but the investment in time and production is much lower, right? Maybe host-read ads are the best. And we've, you know, for most of our shows, we do host-read ads, and they're higher. They take a lot more to do. Getting hosts to read ads, changing the ads over time. Like that just
finding the companies.
Yeah. It's a lot of work. Where automating it is definitely less work, but you end up with the weirdest pairings. And I know, I mean, even on our own shows, man, listening to casino ads show up on our own shows where we have no control over those partnerships just makes us look bad. I don't like it. I don't like it.
It's a frustrating element. But, you know, to his point, maybe more people would be willing to actually jump in and try that in that space to see. Yeah. So who knows? Maybe it's going to be more than just casino ads.
Casinos. Well, don't forget, it's political season, Andy. We could have a lot of political ads. If you open yourself up to it, you could make big money. big money. The other thing they talked a lot about, I think this was another big deal, is like podcast partnerships and sort of ad hoc networks that come up to help distribute without taking the rights of the shows away from creators. And that's very much what, you know, True Story does in a lot of areas. We have other podcasters who come to us and we distribute, and they maintain all the creation and all the agency and authority around their show. But we help support them and grow them as part of our network, which is, we love doing.
Yeah.
And so I think it's interesting when you look at the, you know, the really big players in the space are like Radiotopia, PRX, right? Public Radio Exchange. And they give you an opportunity if you go through PRX, because the National Public Radio sort of national sort of network of stations goes to PRX and decides if, and cherry picks shows from there to actually run on traditional radio, which I think is awesome. Like, what a great way to do it. It does require a lot of like tweaking of your show. You have to change the format and get your ads in the right place and all of that. But it's sure. really, really cool. So they're talking about a lot of those kind of networks, those sort of ad hoc networks. Multitude is a network that does something similar, helps independent creators to sell ads on their shows. And it also has...
It's yeah. a, like a podcast co-op is what they have, right?
Exactly. And has that same expectation of creators to help each other by they go on tours together. They boost one another's shows. You know, they run shows across the network in each other's mid-roll ads. It's really great. Like, it's a neat model. Jesse Thorne sold Maximum Fun, his podcast network that he worked on for years and years and years, to the creators themselves. And this includes like the McElroys and Judge John Hodgman for his show. Jordan Jesse Go was obviously a part of their network. They've got a ton of podcasts over on Maximum Fun. And it is, you know, I've heard mixed results from people who are on the Maximum Fun network, but now that it is a co-op essentially, they've been doing some really interesting things. And I think their fund drives are fun to listen to. Like, I think they've been doing some great stuff over there. So it's a really interesting kind of a market of creators to come together and support one another. And I think it makes independent podcasting less lonely as a result of it, right? You know, you come
right.
join True Story, you get access to our Discord, you get other creators, you can ask questions to other creators about how to do the show. And I think that makes it really fun to be kind of a part of that. It is, you are a network, but you still maintain agency and control over your own show. That's what makes these things kind of special. It harkens back to the early days of podcasting when you can do what you want, right? You can do whatever you want. But it does give you structure, scaffolding, support.
Yeah. And in this world of podcasting, like, having that support network is very valuable. You know, you're getting a little more exposure when you have a whole group of you coming forward as a collective. And I think that's one of the things that makes this model so interesting and work well in the space.
Well, and it also says to me, like, if you aren't listening to shows that are part of a co-op, you should find some Maximum Fun, look for some PRX shows, you know, go listen to You're Saying It Wrong, which was now a PRX show. I think it's really, I think they're really fun, great, charismatic shows with a bunch of weirdo podcasters that are just really fun to listen to. So definitely check it out. They pivoted a little bit because they did this great interview with Stephen Dubner, who's the host of the Freakonomics radio show. And they asked him, you know, what do you think? Ariel Shapiro asked him, what do you think about this, quote, moment in podcasting? And the loaded, like, the loaded air of that question, I think, is not to be understated. Because, you know, Shapiro's coming to this saying, like, things are things cratering? And I love Dubner's answer. It really depends on what angle you're coming from. The short version is that there was probably a little bit too much panic because the combination of the recession that never really quite happened, and then the big iOS adjustment and how it's playing out in reality and in perception. Additionally, from the platform side, there was just massive, massive acquisition, consolidation, and then it breaks. So it's confusing. The good news for me is I don't care that much. Full stop. Like, that's a great answer to this question. And something that you and I have talked about in past episodes of this very show, that what we're seeing here is not a cratering of podcasting. We're seeing it as a bubble that popped, that needed to pop.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Straighten things out. Get things moving in the right path.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And again, what we started talking about, this iOS adjustment is just a rationale adjustment, right? It's just a rationalization of what we've been doing and getting more truth behind those numbers. So I think that's really useful. And, you know, I'm seeing more and more people buying into the snark of the podcast industry is cratering when the truth is it's really not, right? We have more people listening to podcasts, trying podcasts than ever before. And there's still a lot of opportunity, a lot of headroom from people who haven't discovered podcasts yet. So I'm still an enthusiastic participant.
Well, you know, it reminds me of, you know, the Oscars were recently held, and Cord Jefferson won best adapted screenplay for his script for American Fiction. And in his speech, he's talking about how film can be so exciting, and brings up this idea of, like, film is only like 100 years old, and imagine being in theater or in art when it was only 100 years old, and like all of the possibilities you have moving forward. And like, we're not even like, you know, a quarter of a century into podcasting.
Right.
And it's like, think of like where we are now and like where all of this is going to go. Like, it's still the Wild West, but, you know, everybody's figuring out. It's exciting. It's an exciting time to be here.
That is a great point. And I so loved Cord's speech for that very reason. And I had not applied it to podcasting at all. I'm so glad you did. It's like, we just woke up to podcasting in the scale of kind of filmmaking, art, history, time. We got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, yeah. This is a really thrilling time to be working in this space and figuring it all out. We're all figuring it out together.
We're all fine here. I don't have anything else. Do you have anything else?
No, I think a lot of interesting stuff. It's always exciting with these summits and getting new opinions and thoughts in the world and in the space, trying to, you know, wrap our heads around all these changes that are perpetually happening. So, good information in this one.
Yeah, I think so too. Thanks everybody for hanging out, listening to another episode of Pete and Andy on the Podcast, a podcast we just can't stop talking about podcasting.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.